Hello, everyone. Welcome to our newest edition of Your Injury Lawyer podcast. This is Bill Berkey. My website is yourinjurylawyer.com. My guest today is Maria Alamo. Did I pronounce that right, Malia?
Alamo.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're from and how you became a lawyer?
Yes, kind of a loaded question. By descent, I'm Italian. I'm an Italian citizen. English is my second language. I was born in the great state of New Jersey and spent some time in New Jersey and Pennsylvania and New York before I became a Floridian, and I haven't looked back. And what was the second part of that? How I became a lawyer?
Yeah, but first, can you tell me a little bit about, I had no idea you were Italian. So you were not born in Italy, but where is your family from?
My family is from Sicily. So okay. Although I wasn't born there, I spent the majority of my summers in my childhood and even into my adult years in Italy, well, in Sicily with my mom's family. My mom is one of seven. My dad was an only child, so not nearly as much family to go visit.
And where in Sicily?
My father's from a little town called Castrofilippo. My mother is from a town called Favara, and the province is Agrigento.
So is that in the mountains or is that by the beach?
Oh, no, no. We were about 15 minutes from the beach. Which is why I like Florida so much, I think.
Okay. And where did you go to high school then?
I went to high school in Pennsylvania in Kutztown.
And then where did you go, say, to undergrad and law school?
I did my undergraduate work at Marywood University in Scranton, which was close enough to home that I could go home on the weekends. And then I came down to Florida to go to Ave Maria School of Law in Naples. And I never looked back. Florida was it after that.
At what age did you start thinking of maybe becoming a lawyer? What kind of made you get really interested in being a lawyer, and maybe even what kind of lawyer were you interested before you went to law school?
I was probably 14 or 15 years old. I don't think I was driving yet. And at that time, I was attending the Johns Hopkins gifted program in the summer, where effectively you'd go away and take a college course for 3 weeks. And this particular time I was in Maryland at Johns Hopkins, and they had taken us out for breakfast or lunch, and I had gotten my muffin and my coffee and I had sat down outside and my purse was on the table. And what I did not know was that there was a prison or a jail a couple blocks down, and a gentleman who had just been released walked past my table and took my purse. And I was devastated, not for the monetary items in there, but my grandfather had passed away and I carried up his photograph, the only photograph I had in my purse, and I wanted it back. I was really pissed that it was stolen. And so in that moment, I had kind of become decisive and said, I want to be a lawyer and I want to be a lawyer for justice. Like, I don't want this to happen to other people. And so originally I thought I'd be a state attorney and prosecute criminals. But as you know, that's not exactly where I ended up.
Did you file criminal charges, or were you able to get your pocketbook back?
A very kind police officer went dumpster diving and found my purse with all of the items minus the money in it. And I didn't care to press the criminal charges for the money. I just wanted my grandfather's picture back.
Excellent. So you go to Ave Maria Law School, and you were thinking of maybe being a public defender or a prosecutor. And can you maybe tell us a little bit about your journey through law school and how your work focus maybe kind of changed to a different area?
Yeah, I came down here for law school, and my first semester of my first year of law school, we were writing these big appellate briefs that were due at the end of the semester. And I had gone to get some kind of lunch or snack and coffee to bring back to the library so that I can continue writing my brief. And a lady ran the red light and T-boned me and just left me completely stunned in the middle of an intersection. And there was somebody very kind behind me who helped me through that while ambulance and EMS and all of that came. And I did intern as a CLI for the state attorney's office, and originally really thought I was going to go there. I did hire an attorney for my car accident, Richard Pertz, who was incredibly kind, smart, and effective. And so I really thought I'd go the state route, and it just, I kind of found my way into personal injury by starting out doing some PIP work, and the rest is history.
Can you maybe tell us a little bit about your personal injury work that you've done over the years and maybe about one or two of your cases?
Sure. I started out, like I said, doing the PIP work, which is the $10,000 worth of coverage that goes with your auto insurance, typically to cover you for any bills you had in an accident. From there, I started handling personal injury cases that would range from defective products to auto accidents, slip and falls, trip and falls. I did have a premises liability, what turned into a lawsuit actually had to do with an alligator bite. So that was kind of a notable case. I've tried all kinds of cases from uninsured motorist claims, regular auto accidents, premises cases with Walmart and other retailers. So really, I've done a little bit of everything. If somebody is hurt and there's a way to recover for them, I'm usually looking for an avenue to do it.
Thank you. Could you maybe tell us a little bit about how you work a case up when you get a case in? What do you try to do to maybe move the needle? What suggestions would you have for a fellow attorney to work a case up?
Sure. So when I first get that first phone call where somebody says, I'm hurt, here's what happened, and I need help, I'm looking to who has evidence, has it been preserved, is it in enough time that I can get to it? What do I mean by that? If it happened at an intersection, I'll see if there are any local businesses that might have had cameras, Ring cameras or security cameras that they've installed that might have caught the incident on camera. I request police reports when it's an auto accident. If it's a trip and fall or a slip and fall over a hazard that we can get a picture of, I'll send my investigator out to photograph it so that we know what happened. Because just because you sign a case up today doesn't mean it's going to go to trial next week like it does in the movies. It takes a little bit of time to get it worked up and things can change. The other thing that I do that I think is effective at moving the needle is I want to stay on top of the medical within the case, right? So I want to know where my client is treating, what are the symptoms, what are they treating for? And sometimes reading through those records as they come in and being able to update an adjuster and say, hey, you know, I know you thought this was just a simple rear end crash, but actually it's got a traumatic brain injury. And here's the care my client's going to need for the next X amount of years of their life. That will sometimes move a needle and cause the insurance company to tender perhaps a little bit more expeditiously than they normally would.
Thank you. Have you seen cases, a lot of cases, where you've actually been able to get videos from neighbors or Ring doorbells or anything like that? Have you actually been lucky enough to find those kind of things?
I have had a handful of cases where I have been able to get Ring cameras. And on one occasion, I actually had a bank that had a camera aimed at their ATM. Obviously, I didn't want to see the ATM information. I was looking at the road on the backside. And we were able to get that video to try and obtain the identifying information on the vehicle that hit my client to try and get their insurance information.
That's excellent. And that's good work if you can get that kind of thing. That's just a hard thing to find. But if you can find that you know, picture tells a thousand words. When you go to trial, can you maybe tell us a little bit about maybe your voir dire? What are you trying to do? Any suggestions for anyone that's doing a voir dire on a case?
Voir dire is probably one of my favorite parts of trial. I know a lot of attorneys feel overwhelmed or dislike it, but really all you're trying to do is connect with the jury and find out who's there to be helpful versus who really just might not be the best fit for this case. So for as much as we attorneys talk, I think it's equally important to listen and process what that potential jury member is saying to us and ask those appropriate follow-up questions before moving on.
Can you maybe give us any suggestions on how you try to connect with the jury during voir dire?
I try really hard not to be into my notes. Now, that doesn't mean I don't bring them, because I, like anyone else, I do need notes to make sure I cover everything I need to. But I do try to make eye contact and look at either the entire panel or the person who I'm speaking with at the time that I'm speaking with them, as opposed to having my face buried in paper and writing while they're responding to my question and looking back to me.
And can you tell us a little bit about your opening? How do you try to do an opening? Do you have a lot of written out? Do you use PowerPoint or other exhibits? Do you try to use them during your opening? Do you try to do a quick opening, or What is your style that you try to do when you try to do an opening?
I usually try and be very succinct in my opening. The jury is going to hear a lot over the next several days of trial, and so I don't want to essentially beat a dead horse. I want to cover enough information that they know what the case is about and what to expect. If it's an auto accident case, I sometimes will have the blow up of the Google map intersection or perhaps a photo of the intersection. It just depends on what it is that I have available. I don't otherwise typically use exhibits in my opening. I will say I am probably on the shorter side of an opening because I like to give the jury what they need to know. What happened? What are my facts? What do I expect the defense is going to say? And why my client is correct and why they should prevail and how we are going to show that throughout the next several days of trial.
Do you have any other suggestions of how someone could maybe work their case up a little bit better, meeting with your client, witnesses, and any other suggestions that you might have?
Yeah, two things. I always try to look at the case as what rule did the defendant or defendants break? And if you frame your case that way, it'll be much easier to respond to any argument from an adjuster or an opposing attorney. And one day you'll potentially be presenting to the jury what rule was broken. And second, I can't really tell my client's story without sitting down with them. So I do like to, I say sitting down either by phone or by Zoom or in person if they'd still like to come in person and really just hear all the ways that this case and these injuries have affected them. And sometimes that just means chatting over a cup of coffee and things that would never occur to you as being an issue. They're like, hey, you know, the other day my kid came over and we were trying to do X, Y, and Z and I realized I couldn't anymore. And then you push and you prod a little more and you really see those human losses and what these injuries have caused them to lose.
There are some attorneys that I see when they're going to trial, they maybe have banker boxes with maybe print out of depositions and maybe preparation for asking questions of your witnesses or cross-examining the defense's witnesses. And there are other attorneys and that maybe use a program to organize stuff. When you go to trial, do you use kind of the banker box method or do you use a program or do you maybe use a combination? And would you have any suggestions or recommendations of how someone could organize their case and just kind of take the pressure off in that way?
So I am a paper gal, even though I know so many things are paperless these days. I do go to trial with banker's boxes full of paperwork. That being said, I also do have a backup version on my computer just in case I need to be able to search something quickly. I can. So I do bring both the banker's boxes and my laptop to a trial. I use a method of organizing that involves five or six little manila folders. And obviously that depends on how in depth and how many witnesses you have. But I essentially have one folder for each portion of the trial. I don't really write out my opening, but I do have stuff on note cards. So things like my note cards or any exhibits I might want to use will be inside the opening folder. For my witnesses, I'll have my outlines for all of them. And so all of that will be organized by section so that I can quickly access it when that part of the trial arises.
Can you maybe tell us a little bit about how you sequence your witnesses? Is there kind of a set way that you do it? Do you always call maybe the defendant first and your client last? Or do you have, or does it vary? Or can you maybe share a little bit about?
It does vary. I try and present it in a way that would make the most sense to the jury. Myself and the defense and our clients, we've been living with the case for sometimes years, whereas the jury will be presented with the facts in the case for the first time, a little bit in voir dire and then in our openings. And so I don't always like to start with a doctor, but I will if it's a very strong witness and I feel like the jury has enough flavor of how the accident happened through the openings. If the defendant makes a better witness for us than they do for themselves, I will sometimes start out with the defendant as well. And I always like to end on a strong witness, whether that's my client or a strong doctor or expert, just kind of depends on the case and how many witnesses. And of course, I do use before and after witnesses, and those will vary from having one or more. But I find my strongest witnesses to either be an expert, whether it's a treating expert or a retained expert or my own client.
And can you tell us a little bit about your closing and rebuttal? How do you do that? Do you have notes, card structure, or a set way to do it? Or what do you try to do during closing?
During closing, what we would call the first close before the rebuttal, I typically like to go over the verdict form and sometimes highlight jury instructions, although the defense attorney and I have probably gone over them several times and we are very familiar with jury instructions and verdict forms, the likelihood is that your jury is not. And so I like to explain to them what I might think is appropriate to fill in on each line and why. I do like to highlight certain points of defense witnesses versus our witnesses and why it is that they should find for our client. And it kind of circles back to, you know, what did the defendant do wrong? I like to button that up in closing. And the way I do that is simply by outlining in the defense's testimony or other witnesses' testimony what they can attest to that the defendant or defendants did wrong. I don't typically have it written out. I do have note cards with just some points jotted down so that I don't forget to hit them.
And what about damages? Is there a particular way that you argue damages? Do you use like a WANAD or an hourly rate? Or do you have any suggestions or recommendations of how someone could argue damages?
So the damages, I hate to say the lawyer answer, but it depends. It depends on what kind of damages we're looking at. Are we looking at medicals? Are we just looking at pain and suffering? Are we looking at a wrongful death versus somebody who had a surgery? Wrongful deaths and loss of a loved one excluded. Typically, the way that I like to do damages is a per diem method. But I also like to highlight all the things my client testified to is what immediately after the accident was it that was hurting and they could or could not do during the treatment? What types of limitations did they have? What types of things in their lives did they have to miss out on because of the treatment or because of the injuries? And then in the future, you know, now that they're healed or at maximum medical improvement, what is it that still has not come back 100% and that a doctor does not expect to come back to 100%? If there's going to be future care, like future or additional surgeries, I like to talk about that as well, because there will be more pain and suffering, just like there was after the first surgery. So that's the long way of saying I use a per diem when it comes to those types of medicals.
Thank you. Could we go back a little bit? And let's say you have a mediation or a non-binding arbitration. Do you kind of do similar preparation for mediation and non-binding arbitration? And is your statement that you make similar for both a mediation and a non-binding arbitration?
So yes, similar preparation. And I don't hide the ball or hide my cards or anything like that. I want the defense and I want the arbiter and the mediator to know what the pain and suffering is. Now, I won't calculate necessarily the per diem and give them that at a mediation or an arbitration. Just kind of depends on the facts of the case and the extent and severity of the damages. But I will go through all of those damages that I outlined that my client experienced and how they evolved and changed throughout the life of the case and the life of treatment.
Maria, how long have you been a lawyer?
I have been licensed in Florida since 2013. I believe it was June 2013, and New Jersey was slightly before that.
Okay. How is the New Jersey bar?
I think it's alive and well. I don't handle a lot up there, but that was the backup plan in case I didn't stay in Florida.
Okay. Let me ask you this. My daughter is 13 and a half. You've been a lawyer about 10 years. Have you run into any crazy things as being a female as a lawyer?
So many crazy things. most notably, And this is always what comes to mind when somebody asks this question is, before having my own firm, I worked for somebody else and both of the partners were male. Very pleasant. No complaints about either of them. But I used to cover cases for them. And if there was traveling to do, I would do the traveling. And so we had a deposition in the panhandle and I was going to cover it, which wasn't a big deal. I had a sweater on, but I had my suit jacket on top of that, was wearing a suit. I brought my laptop. I had turned and had a conversation with the client and the defense attorney walked in and he just looked at me and said, "Oh, well, you must be the court reporter." And I said, "No, no, sir. No, I'm the attorney. We're waiting on the court reporter. I haven't seen anybody come in here yet to do that. I haven't run into it on my own because, well, there's no one else to ask for. But when I was working for my prior firm, if a male defense attorney did not care for the answer that I had given, they'd say, "Well, I want to talk to your boss," or I want to talk to one of the partners. And so those are kind of the two things that stand out as the things that we still see in 2024.
So how the heck did you get to the panhandle from Fort Myers? Did you drive up or fly up?
Oh, no. I flew to Atlanta, which was the only place you could fly to get a connection, and then flew back down to the panhandle.
So do you have any suggestions to a young or beginning lawyer of suggestions of how to get experience in doing voir dire, depositions, openings, closings? What other than just doing it, what other recommendations might you have?
I read every single transcript I could get my hands on, and I sat in every courtroom I could sit in and still be working while there were trials. Everybody's got their own style, right? So just because I say one thing works for me doesn't mean it'll work for the next guy. So it's nice to see different people trying different things so you can find what fits you. You know, outside of doing it, it's hard to get the experience, but reading it in a transcript or seeing it happen in a courtroom will give you maybe a better idea of what your style might be and what reactions are and how people do to that. And to add to that, I also think that finding a really good mentor will go a long way. Somebody who will perhaps let you second chair or, you know, give you an inside peek at cases that they've tried and be willing to talk with you and tell you, you know, "Here's how I did this and here's why I did it."
Can you tell us a little bit about your firm? What's your website? What kind of cases you handle? Your contact information?
Yeah, my website is www.mariagetsjustice.com. I handle mostly personal injury cases. I do also handle what I call consumer claims. So if there is a debt collector who is harassing someone or perhaps not collecting a debt in ways that comply with the law, I will take those cases on and bring the claim against the debt collector. And I also handle what are called debt defense cases, which would be defending somebody who's been sued by either a third-party debt buyer or a credit card company, foreclosures, that type of information. I can be reached at 239-223-4677 or maria@mariagetsjustice.com.
And your office is in South Fort Myers. Where do you handle personal injury cases at? Do you handle personal injury cases statewide or Southwest Florida, or it depends?
I do. I handle them all over the state, and I do handle some cases in New Jersey as well.
And Florida recently changed the personal injury laws a little bit. Have you seen that affect your practice? Have you maybe turned down some cases because of that? How would you say the new personal injury laws changes? How has that affected your practice?
I am fortunate to say that I really don't think it has affected my practice at all. I haven't turned down anything that I would otherwise take. I am still taking negligent security cases, and I haven't really had any kind of a negative impact on anything that's happening for my clients. I will say the only thing I've really noticed since it's changed is that before, adjusters and insurance companies used to really adhere to that demand response deadline, whereas now, knowing that basically they have 90 days to respond, they'll take their time.
Can you tell us, what do you like to do when you're not working? What is your maybe outlet to take care of yourself? Do you exercise? Do you meditate? Do you do yoga? Do you read? Do you travel? What do you do to kind of take care of yourself with being a lawyer, because that's kind of a stressful job.
Yeah. So if the weather is nice, my fiance and I will head to the beach on a Saturday or a Sunday morning and just walk the beach. If it's not super nice or the beach isn't feasible, we do have 3 fur babies who need to be walked. So we do walk them regularly. And things that are truly for myself is I do exercise. I'm still finding what that perfect thing is. But lately I've really been into Peloton and yoga. I do try and hit a yoga on the beach. They have it every Saturday morning if I can. And it's a beautiful view and a great way to relax your mind.
Can you tell us a little bit about your pets? Do you have, is it 3 dogs, and are they small, medium, and large? And can you maybe tell us a little bit about them?
Yeah, we do have 3 dogs, and I thought that one of each size, small, medium, and large, would be perfect. So we have Camilla, who's our baby and the smallest one, and she's a tiny chihuahua. Medium is Lola, who is a mix of terrier, dachshund, and chihuahua. And Tara is our big baby. She's an Australian Shepherd, and she's probably around 50 pounds or so.
Thank you. Do you have any other suggestions for a lawyer or anyone for just dealing with stress, trying to get rid of it as a lawyer, or just anyone else that might have a stressful job?
I think it's probably one of the hardest parts of this job. And I think that everybody is different. So it might take a little time to find and recognize what it is that works for you. And I would say keep trying things until you find what works for you.
Maria, thank you very much for being on Your Injury Lawyer podcast. This is Bill Berkey. My website is www.yourinjurylawyer.com. Our number is 239-549-6689. Thank you very much for listening to Your Injury Lawyer podcast.